Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
Hey, 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 welcome back to episode 22 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's me, Julian. Welcome. I'm back home in New York, my proper apartment. I'm not upstate at my parents anymore. Before we go anywhere, call in 877-557-SWWP to get in contact with me, your intrusive thought therapist. I'm so happy to be back. I immediately got back into the city and went from the Amtrak's train to my therapist. Yes, I wheeled my luggage into my therapist's office and had a really great session, which we can get into in a bit. But I want to focus on like the biggest stories of the world, because the world is unraveling before our eyes. The American Empire is not rapidly coming to the end, but we're seeing flashes of in the pan of moments throughout the course of when history will be told, when you could say this was a pinnacle moment for the demise of this country. Obviously, the biggest story was Trump's birthday and military parade and the No Kings rallies that happened all over the country. Which is awesome that those coincided. It's so us. It's so American. So let's do a quick recap here. Trump's birthday parade was in D.C. This past Saturday on the 14th. Since everybody cares about vanity and metrics, they were expecting about 200,000 people to show up. Reports on the ground said there were about tens of thousands of people. Obviously, significantly less in attendance than what people had assumed would be coming out. Meanwhile, the satellite rallies protests for the No Kings protests, which were anti-Trump and pushing against his king-like regime, were across New York City, Chicago, San Diego, all over the major cities across this country, and even smaller cities in far sheer larger numbers. So we're in a very weird time in the course of, it seems like the elites, the Trump and his cabinet are trying to push this narrative that everything is fine and we're going in the right direction, when very loudly the majority of the people, the population, is against this. And I wanted to share some thoughts, because I've been reading a lot about empires of the past, not in a Star Wars way, I mean in a literal way, more in particular the Roman Empire. And I was thinking about how, just looking at the events that happened Saturday with the Trump very small gathering in D.C. and how we got to a point where the ruling class is so far removed from the people that it's supposed to represent in a so-called democracy. And when Trump says MAGA, which is a calling card for Make America Great Again. I really wanted to dissect and pay more attention to what that is beyond it being just like, you know, like saying, let's go Knicks. Trump did a really great job of creating like a sports team tagline, even down to the merch with the red hats and the flags. Like he's operating like a sports franchise in terms of like outward branding. But, you know, the Romans used to have a saying, which I heard recently, which is interesting. It says they wanted today to be like yesterday and tomorrow to be like today. The Romans were so focused on making sure things stayed the same. And the people that were in charge of pushing that agenda of making things stay where they are, remain the same, were the ruling class. Because if you're in power, the more society advances, the more technologically and educationally things advance, the bigger of a threat the people that are in power are in. You need to keep everybody where they're at, make them feel like they have autonomy and are in some sense in control of their lives, to keep everybody exactly where they were to get you to that point in your life. So let's put this in the context of today. Like, you know, the King's protests, people want to change. They want to actively change the course of this country. Meanwhile, the kings, the Trump and the people that were celebrating this protest, want to make sure those things remain the same. So like MAGA is restoring America, making things the same. So when you say make America great, it's literally just a dog whistle for everybody, like, we're going to make it back to when everything was fine. But what does that mean? What does it mean when everything's fine? It means everybody knew their fucking role. Everyone shut up. And everyone let us do what we need to do without interfering with our thoughts and our actions. So it's really interesting to see these two things play out in real time, where whereas in the past, the media and the stories that were shared were so more so well-respected, like journalism used to be a well-respected, you know, profession. And even take it back to the Roman times, if something was even just like written on a ledger or existed on paper, if it was something that you could read, there was no doubt or no second guessing of it. It was deemed to be true. And at that time, there was some little bit of misinformation. If it was like minted on a coin or something like that, that was the biggest form of, like, you know, if it's printed on this, it has to be true. And we've blown past the wave of truth in journalism, so to speak. Everybody's so siloed in their own beliefs. But what is happening, which we can all experience and share together on a Twitter timeline or on an Instagram reel, the firsthand, everybody has, you know, we always say everyone's their own, you know, reporter. There's no lie to the footage that people can share. So like when TikTok was seeing the initial videos that surfaced after, you know, Israel began attacking Gaza, you can't hide that. We're seeing these things with our own eyes. So I'm going to see something and you're just going to lie to my face and tell me that that's not the truth of the matter. I can see what's playing out. I can see what's happening. And the same people that are the MAGA crowd and the Trumps in particular, as a historian and as someone that is in charge, you always want to be the one in power to retell history, to tell the story of history through that lens. And I found Saturday to be so interesting because we're going to see two very different versions. I don't know if historical text, but in terms of sharing, speaking the events of Saturday, we're going to see a crowd of people that saw what Trump did as the most beautiful, selfless act ever and a celebration of our military and of our people, and not even bring up the No Kings protest, just dismiss the other end of this. And then we're going to see those people that lived in the No Kings protest and were consuming that content and sharing the message there with their audience. So it's really interesting that the people that are in power, the people that usually control the narrative, can no longer seize that. And I think it's really it's difficult for those that are used to being, you know, not only in charge of policy, but in charge of not all the information that's coming out and how it's being presented, is really going to shake things up. Because even as I sit here, if you know who I am, it's obviously, you know, we're all implicitly biased, and it's impossible for a historian to not, you know, show their biases through telling of historical events. So, you know, No Kings is going to play out as one of those things where, depending on who you ask or who you, you know, go to or where you're getting your sources of information, you're going to hear two very different sides of the story. One that's about celebrating America and celebrating the military, and one that's about challenging the government and pushing for a better union. Which is really fascinating. It just had me thinking a lot over the course of the weekend. And ultimately, like Rome and other great civilizations, America will come to an end. I don't think we're nearing that. I think that's a little hyperbolic to jump out and say, this is it, this is the end, we're all going to die. We have the nuclear capabilities to cause a catastrophic event that could certainly change the course of most people lives. But I think the experiment of America is a few hundred years from being over. I don't think we'll last as long as other civilizations, because we're pushing into a territory of, we're removing away from the fabric of what this country is founded on. So the further we get away from that, the further we untether, you know, the further we move away from the Constitution and what this country was founded on, the bigger threat we are to obviously the world at large, but also to ourselves. Like, the worst thing a country can do is have a civil war, because in a civil war, there's no winner. It's the country itself fighting itself. You're using resources. You're killing your own countrymen. And you're, you know, seeing death and destruction that doesn't lead to innovation. It leads to, like, despair and a rebuilding period. And we're seeing pockets of these outbursts, like the politician in Minnesota that was shot by the guy that went into police disguise, and he actually shot at another, I believe, a senator as well. But let's just focus on this parade for now. So the anti-war president had no problem putting our full military on display. The parade itself costed an estimate around $50 million, and that's even before accruing cost for the cleanup fees, which I'm sure were a pretty penny. We know that most of the senators planned to skip it, and across the country, there were 1,500 organized No Kings protests, which I touched on earlier. And the parade itself did cause a lot of, obviously, road shutdowns around the DMV area and flight shutdowns as well. It's actually the first military parade in 34 years in D.C., which is interesting. You know, and in a time where people are struggling across the world, it seems like, and we'll get to Israel and Iran in a minute, but the people that can't put food on their plates, that are struggling to make ends meet, and we're seeing, you know, a 79-year-old man throw himself, like, the biggest birthday ever. It's very self-serving, but I mean, it's nothing short of what Trump has done his whole life. The man shits on a gold toilet. I mean, for God's sake, this is very much on brand. Let's continue with a couple quotes here from J.D. Vance and Donald Trump himself. Vance first spoke and said, "June 14th is, of course, the president of the U.S. Army. It's also, of course, the birthday of the president of the United States. And happy birthday, Mr. President." He delivered a laugh that line. "It's also my wedding anniversary," he said before getting off his knees. And then here we go. Trump spoke. Trump praises the army and armies of years past. Quote, "Our soldiers never give up. They never surrender, never, ever quit. They fight, and they win. It's very him to just repeat the same word 15 times. Here's a good quote. "We're the hottest country in the world right now. Nothing hotter than ICE agents ripping families apart from, you know, high school graduations, or, you know, going through the actual legal process. Ripping, this is the sickest things. I'm really trying to not get into this zone, but here we are. We talk so much about the legal system. If you're going to do something, do it the legal way, do it the legal way, follow the process. The process is put in place to, you know, get you to your ultimate goal, which is not entirely true. These processes are very difficult and time consuming and expensive for a reason. It's so it becomes nearly impossible to gain citizenship. It's all intentional. It's like when we abolish slavery or when black people earn the right to vote, but black people had to take a very specific test to be able to vote. Questions as answerless as, here's a bar of soap. How many bubbles are in a bar of soap? We're looking at that level of, like, nonsensical, you know, processes when it comes to earning your right to live in this country. So we're in Lower Manhattan. We're seeing people go into the court, show up with their family, go through the process. God knows how many hours it took to, you know, book this appointment, how many months they waited for these. This is supposed to be a monumental day in these people's lives. And outside the courtroom are ICE agents just ready to immediately just tear them from, you know, their 6-year-old daughter and throw them in a van and just disappear. Just, they'll never see them again. Like, what if it's not going to the court? What is the proper chain of command to make sure that people can be here legally? If you're going to die on the hill of, we can't have illegals here, people need to be here the right way, then what is the right way? Because when people do it the right way, they're still not being honored or even treated like a citizen. Fuck an American citizen, as a human being. You're just tossing people in the back of trucks and then off into the night, never to be seen again. And then we're seeing them at these protests, and people are marching in the street, and the police converge on one side of the street and the other side of the street. I believe it's called kerneling, and it's a military tactic used to basically trap people, funnel them, and then what do the police do once they know there's no out? That's when they begin pushing people and shooting rubber bullets at people. Like, what your role is to de-escalate. What good does it do? What reputation do you want to have? How do you want to be looked at in the course of history? As you are representing the country, but also like a very serious role within the country. I know people like look down and laugh at, you know, people that go into military service or the police service, but you have a very serious role in the artillery. Pardon me, the artillery in which you're equipped with can inflict a lot of pain if used irresponsibly. And we're seeing, you know, journalists, there was an Australian journalist that got shot in the back. And you can see the military guy off camera direct his gun at her, shoot her intentionally. Like, these aren't accidents. We're seeing drone footage when police don't think they're being caught on camera, you know, stomping people out or using their horses to trample people. Like, we're seeing the most egregious acts done to people that are from here, born here, voted in this country, pay state taxes, could, like, this is their life. America is their life. And we're treating people from here as, you know, nothing, as disposables. So much so that now we're seeing people that are born and raised here get detained purely off the base of racial profiling because they may have an accent and their last name, you know, it sounds, you know, Hispanic, which is insane. But we're also seeing it from people that are simply coming to New York to vacation. There was that video of that couple, the woman and her daughter getting detained, I believe. It was in New York. This woman is on vacation. She doesn't even live here. She fucking, God knows how expensive it is to travel internationally, especially when you save up enough money to come to New York and then spend more money. You know, you're spending like $400-$500 a night in a hotel in New York alone. Like, she's literally contributing to our economy and she gets detained. She's not even from here. Like, it's such a half-ass, broken, backward system. Who do you need to be to feel valued and welcomed in this country? I don't know. I haven't been personally attacked, but I feel like I'm not someone that is well-loved and appreciated in terms of what I look like or obviously how I feel politically in this climate. So anyway, I could go on forever about that. Should we pivot to world politics where things are, you know, even worse? I didn't want to lead with this because I didn't want to get, you know, demonetized immediately. But, you know, here we are. Over the weekend, the big event, I believe this was Friday, June 13th, Israel launched a major airstrike and covert drone campaign targeting Iranian nuclear sites, military infrastructures, and senior commanders. That included hundreds of aircraft and Mossad-led drone teams disabling Iran's air defense and missiles launched before the bombing. This led to an immediate retaliation by Iran. Operation True Promise 3, in response, Iran, with the help of proxies like Yemen and the Houthis and Iraqi militia, fired over 150 ballistic missiles and 100-plus drones into Israeli territory. The strikes hit various parts of Tel Aviv, causing civilian casualties, etc. I mean, that's the casualty of war. Look, we're looking at now a conflict where before missiles were thrown, before Israel shot first, Trump spoke with Netanyahu and said, hey, man, like, I'm talking to some of the people over there. Don't, you know, don't do it yet. Don't do anything yet. And like everything in Netanyahu's life, he moves by his own accord, says, fuck you, Trump. Goes ahead and sends, you know, gives the operation the green light to go. So now here we are. The initial ports where America isn't involved with this conflict. This isn't an American, you know, issue. It's not an American war. It's funny how Marco Rubio went out and said that. And then I believe it was like a few hours later. It may have been, you know, right after Iran responded, or even maybe even before that, how quickly the timeline changed from this isn't our war, this isn't our battle, coming from like legitimate accounts, you know, from news sources and politicians alike, to they clearly got their marching order. And then it was, we have to do our best. We have to defend Israel. We have to make sure that our, you know, our countrymen, they're safe and sound, and we have to take care of this. This is now our war, is basically what they were saying. So everyone got their marching orders. All of a sudden, now we're involved, which, I mean, why? It's insane. I mean, it's everything that they do, we're involved. And not only that, like, we're funding it, we're giving them supplies. Like, apparently Israel killed a leader of the IRGC, which is, you know, I guess great for them. So much so, talk about precision. They sent a rocket into an apartment building and just put it through his, allegedly, they put it through his room and just got him. So they can kill with that level of precision when necessary. But when it comes to the women and children right next door, it's like telling a kindergartner to draw in between the lines. It's just like, blah, blah, nothing matters. We're just going to cover the whole sheet. It's, I mean, we're seeing in real time. And again, this goes back to what I led with controlling the historian, the winners, you know, they always say the victors control how history is told. We're seeing in real time the truth of our, who Israel and the United States really are in terms of being international bullies. And in terms of just having the urge to impose themselves on every neighboring country, not even neighboring. I mean, we're nowhere near them. We don't exist over in that part of the world, but we will goddamn insert ourselves as best we can over there. And this just snowballing of disdain and hatred for Iranian people and other people in that region, my people, my Lebanese people, Syrian people, you know, Yemenese people. We're seeing this start when Benjamin Netanyahu certainly when he first took office and said, you know, this is in the early 90s that they were, this is Iran's 2 years away from, you know, nuclear weapons, Iran's 5 years away from nuclear weapons. And every few years he's saying that and repeating that and repeating that and building this constant threat of something that never existed. It's like a Svengali. He's just, you know, with the hopes that our leaders over here, our president over here, will hear what he says, believe it, and then continue to fund whatever the hell they need to work on. In doing so, it's an aversion. He's saying they're building these nuclear weapons over here when in fact we're just funding their operations to then build their new nuclear weapons. It's like the same reason, it's the same tactic with weapons of mass destruction. These things do not exist. They never existed. We're just using mainly Islamophobia, but just projecting an image of what we think evil is onto a region of the world that it seems foreign to us. And because it's foreign, it means it's bad. It means we inherently don't trust what they're doing because they're not us, which is so sick and disgusting. We've dehumanized a region of the world because of our deep, sinister plans and insecurities that our leaders here have. We're the bad guys. America is the bad guy. And we have a brother. I'd say a little brother, but Jesus Christ, they got us on a leash. We have a brother in the region that was put there specifically to keep an eyes watch and to bully that region when need be. So it's really sad, and it's awful. I know what you can see how this is going to play out. We're going to get involved with Iran, and I'm sure we're going to send our troops and people that way. And then it's going to matriculate into Lebanon. Now all of a sudden we're going to see, oh, the Houthis moved, and now they've moved to Beirut. Or, oh, the southern border of Lebanon, it looks like there's some activity going on down there. And then they're going to push into Syria. This isn't a scraping of the bad people. It's a taking of the region. Saying return the hostages is like, that's just a dog whistle to just excuse any violent, egregious crime that you guys want to pursue. And I really wasn't trying to do all this today. I really wasn't, because I actually am in a pretty good mood. But the events of this weekend have been so bad. And I think it's really important to try to offer my perspective the best I can. The shitty thing is I can do this for however long I've been going here. But there is no solution. I'm not offering solution. I'm just trying to communicate what I perceive to be the truth of the matter. And I'm happy that we can see who America's always been, but it's made it very difficult to love this country and want to stay here long term. I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it. I don't know if it weren't New York City, which is damn near impossible to live in anyway, just from a financial standpoint. I don't know where I would move elsewhere in this country. I would probably leave. I would become an expat. Gladly, though. Like, I'd want to. And we were like, well, where would you live? The whole world's fucked up. I don't know. I'd have to figure that out. But I know I'd probably lay easier at night, not contributing to whatever the hell we have going on here. Because it's nothing that I'm proud to support. In music news, but still obviously within conflict, Kendrick did his two nights at the Rogers Center in Canada. I believe he was the first artist to do back-to-back sold-out nights at the Rogers Center in Canada. Congrats to Kendrick Lamar. He's clearly the run is not over. He just keeps beating that drum and hammering it over the head. He got a 2-minute standing ovation after Not Like Us. People were at the New Ho King restaurant, dancing, blasting Kendrick's music, eating the dish that he'd coined on the album there. This has to be, I would say, the worst part of this for Drake. I mean, I can't imagine anything worse than seeing someone have a part of their victory lap in your home state, in your home country, and just, you know, just nail in the coffin when you're, you know, sitting at your mansion, just like, what the hell is going on? The city looked incredible. It was so cool to see that moment. And I mean, dude, you lost, bro. Like, it's if you need to get a constant reminder that you lost, it's going to keep happening. Obviously, this being the worst of it. Drake did call the Canadian politician Jamit Singh a goof for going to Kendrick's concert. This is a screenshot from their DMs. The guy, Jamit, said, "I'm honored. Thanks for the follow." This is from October 7th. Oh, funny. 2019. And then at 12:47 a.m., Drake DM'd him, "You're a goof," once he found out that he was there. This stuff hurts Drake. It eats at him. And he keeps pushing away people out of his life. And it's like, I get it. This was, your life is directly affected. But if you're a fan of music, you know, it's crazy. A lot of people ever at that show love Drake. They probably celebrate Drake. They probably go to his show if he did one there next week. If you're a fan of music, if you're a fan of hip hop, you're a fan of this moment. You're a fan of that entire, you know, summer run. It was a beautiful moment in hip hop history. So for you to take every single person that is in support of Kendrick at all, or just anybody that was involved with the beef, as like a personal threat, it's pretty lame. Like, you know, then you go on your little Instagram post, you know, posting you like you just left the gym. I mean, dude, I'll just say this. I hope Iceman is what we deserve, because I want some good Drake music, and I hope it's enough for him to, I don't think I'll ever put this past him, but I hope it's enough for him to stop doing like the petty outward showing of disgust for everybody that's, you know, in hip hop. It's weird. It's tough, you know. It's a bad look. Like, I don't want to say corny, but like, it's just not a bad look. It's just a really shitty look. And you got people saying like, there's a bomb on this album, bro. There's going to be some heat on this album. A bomb for what, bro? The first bomb got diffused. It doesn't matter. Like, he lost the battle. It's okay that he lost the battle. He's still Drake. Just put out a great album. Iceman, which is hilarious that it's Iceman in the context of the world. Maybe switch the name. Maybe the No Kingsman. But this is, you know, just put out the album. I'm excited for the new music. I'm not going to listen to that new record with Smiley. Don't care for that one. Didn't even give it a listen. I'm going to breeze over that, pretend it never existed. But I am always invested in a solo Drake album. So just come back with a hit, dude. You still got that Nokia Records going crazy. Like, you didn't have to do this, like, subtle shots from, like, in the gym and telling the politician he's a goof. Like, you don't have to do those things. You're fucking Drake, bro. Like, you are okay. Just be Drake and continue your legacy. Speak via your music. Don't do the petty stuff. It never ages well. I did have a funny thought that at the gym actually today. I was like, you know when journalists do that thing where they always refer to artists as their hit? So it's like, in the context of what I'm saying, it's God's plan rapper Drake, da 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 da, like, and then they go into like the article itself. I think it would be really funny if there was a trend of journalists, this is the kind of journalist I would be, if they would refer to them by their worst record. So if you were, again, to use Drake, be like, the Heart Part 6 rapper Drake, da 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 da. And I was thinking of like, what is the worst rap song in history for your favorite artist that you could do that prefix of, here's the song that sucks ass, and then here's the, you know, rest of the article. Just a thought I had earlier today that made me laugh. I was thinking about certain songs and artists in my mind that were pretty funny. If you have one, throw it in the comment. I'd love to see your version of this. It's pretty funny. But yeah, tough look for Drake fans and the whole OVO army over the course of the weekend. It's really funny how this cuts so deep for so many people. Just enjoy the music, man. It's fun. We're all here for a limited time. People have dropped two of the greatest artists of our time, went at it. And it's pretty exciting to be a part of that. So keep doing you, buddy. You'll be all right. Little bit of sports. When I was home with my dad, I was watching the NBA Finals, obviously, but also the NHL playoffs. I will say, coming off of the Canada rant there, I am rooting for the Edmonton Oilers because Canada is right for hockey. It's their sport. It doesn't feel right for Florida to win, especially back-to-back. It feels like a disservice to the game itself. So I'm rooting for Canada. I know they're down right now, but the games have been incredible. Most of them going into overtime, most of them being like extreme comebacks to even push into overtime. It's been a really great series because on the other side of the token here, an NBA Finals that not much the country gives a shit about. It's, you know, I'm watching it a little bit. Actually, the first game I watched was the last game that OKC just won, but that's not true. I watched the one before that too. But anyway, I think I missed the first two. But it's just been whatever. I'm just not interested in either of these teams. I will say I have, like, you know, at some point I have to own up to the fact that I've highly underestimated this Indiana team, and they are not at all who I thought they were, and they are a legit team and a legit contender, which is crazy to say this far into the finals. But, you know, they're a good team. They play really good team basketball. So I still want OKC to win. I'm still hoping that they win. But, you know, I'm hoping the rest of this series is an entertaining watch. Before I get out of here, I do want to say happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there, including my dad. Obviously, we had a great FaceTime earlier. It was so nice spending time with him this past week. And actually, this is pretty exciting. Both my mom and dad are coming down to the city this weekend to go to two shows with me. We're going to go to see Boz's show at Sony Hall and catch one of Jameson's shows as well. I'm excited to have my parents down here for a little industry weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm honestly just as excited as they are. It's been pretty cool to do something like this with them. And yeah, so excited to bop around the city, have them down here. It's been a little gloomy. Hopefully the weather clears up. I'm not going to do a voicemail today because I have to run. I gotta go somewhere to do some stuff. That sounds really shady. It's nothing nefarious. Honestly, I want to go pick up more flowers from Trader Joe's. I've been making these little flower bouquets that have brought me immense joy. I have so many plants in my apartment, but my apartment is overrun by the green, which is great. It's a great color. But I want a little, you know, more of the spectrum, a little color variation in my apartment. So I've been doing every 2 or 3 weeks or so picking up a mixed bouquet of flowers and cutting them up into smaller arrangements. Throwing some baby's breath in there to fill the arrangement itself. I'm really stepping into this like full plant horticulture life. Like, I love the direction that this is heading. My current bedroom has 8 plants in it and a few flower arrangements. So, you know, it's gonna, my bedroom in my apartment at some point is just going to look like the scene in Where the Wild Things Are, where Max is in his pajamas and you do the page flip. This used to be my favorite page transition. You do the page flip from his bedroom and then you flip the page and both sides of the book are just he's standing in the woods. He's in the forest and it's him in that position. a position that photo. I want to get that tattooed. I still don't know where I want to get it though, but anyway, that's where I'm headed in my life, guys. Thank you again for tuning in. This is a good episode. Got a little very political at the front, had some fun at the end, but appreciate y'all. Thank you for tuning in. I did do an interview, which should be coming out relatively soon, so keep an eye out for that. I will be posting it, but yeah, we'll talk soon. Have a great week. I appreciate y'all for tuning in. Episode 22, Something Wrong with the Podcast. Peace. Something wrong with the pussy.